Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy that we get from American politics. My name is Joan Knight. I am an independent, and I'm in Maryland.
I'm Emily Brewer. I'm a moderate Republican, I think.
I'm Greg Matuzak. I'm your liberal Democrat from Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm DJ McGuire from Suffolk, Virginia. I know I'm an economic conservative, and I am a Republican until at least the 7th of June.
I'm Kevin Kelton. I live in Los Angeles, and I've been told I carry the water for the GOP, and I'm a corporate chill, but I just think I'm a moderate Democrat.
Excellent. And you guys, you can find us on the web at perfectunionpodcast.com, the blogs, the commentary. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. Rate and review us on iTunes would be fantastic. And hey, you know what is also fun is to share our links on your Facebook feed. You should do that. And I'll tell you what, let us know if it's not fun, and we'll refund your money.
All the cool kids are doing it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I've been gone for 2 weeks, and before we jump into it, I have this story that I wanted to share. It's pretty fantastic. So I was at a convention in Boston representing a nutrition company. And so I'm standing there, and I'm talking to the folks, and one of the ladies comes up to me one day and says, "Do any of your products have GMOs?" And I say, "No, they're all GMO-free." She says, "Good, because GMOs can make you gay, so I stopped eating them." And I stared at her for a couple of seconds, and then said, "Yeah, no GMOs," and kept going. So this has stayed with me. So I've Googled GMOs make you gay, and I've started reading up on some of these ideas. And I just wanted to share with you that Victoria Jackson is one of the proponents of the GMOs make you gay movement.
Well, then it must
Victoria
be
Victoria Jackson, yep. from former Saturday Night Live alumni, yep. Right?
And okay. There's also some results on soy can make kids gay. And there's also a great study on how eating too many grits can make you gay. So there's a lot. There might be something to this. I don't
know. I've heard,
sure.
I've heard soy. Isn't soy high in estrogen?
Yeah,
there's that. I'd heard that one before, and that there were studies where kids were having a lot of soy, and young boys were showing. And that one is actually, I'd heard that one before, that putting on, like, the soy milk, and that one I'd heard before, but it was an internet, like, one of those things, like, sure, they were large amounts of estrogen, blah, 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 but it wasn't like GMO stands for, like, gay men only or something like that. But, no, so, yeah.
It also depends on how you consume it. If you spread it on a human penis.
Oh, my God. Can I just say, like, I'm Googling this right now because I'm so distraught. I'm just hoping this is a really fucked up monologue. Excuse me.
No. There's a couple pages of returns there. So, but you learn something new. You go out into the world and you find people that disagree with you and have their own views, and you learn something. You become a more complete individual. And I don't know, do we see parallels with this, with the current state of the Republican National Committee and the way that they are trying to grow through love and communication and understanding to grow the party and the ideals?
Well, I'm from a wing of the party called, you know, Next Gen GOP, and then we're all about marriage equality, so don't ask me, because I'm all about it. So I'd be the wrong Republican to ask that's not ready for change, but... Wow.
Well, see, that's an interesting thing, and I'm glad you brought this up, because we're seeing this in, like, North Carolina and of course Mississippi, okay, and you have this whole wing, whether it's down south or even in the Midwest, where they're very anti-LGBT, and you know, and it doesn't seem like, and I know a lot of Republicans, and they're like, no, we're very pro-gay rights, and it seems like that's the next thing that's going to, it's another thing, excuse me, that divides the Republican Party.
What do you guys think? I just wrote something on a blog post about this the other day, about the whole bathroom issue, this HB2 nonsense, and so, like, I just feel like, and I'm going to be very basic on this, is the bill is just ridiculous. First of all, by the time that someone is getting to a bathroom change, changing bathrooms, at that point, you're probably not going to know the difference anyway, so it's a moot point. I think that common sense still rules the day, so the fact that we actually have to legislate bathroom choice is absolutely absurd.
I would simply
okay,
say,
what about in Mississippi? Okay,
I would
I'm
say
sorry.
A couple things. First of all, now we know how that billionaire dinosaur made his money. He made it on Monsanto. Secondly, none of you got that joke. That's terrifying. Anyhow, okay, maybe one of you did. So I think, I mean, North Carolina's HB2 was a complete hot mess for a whole host of reasons. It was largely reversing a bunch of local ordinances. I personally like the part where they reversed all the minimum wage hikes, but we'll put that to one side for now. The part that I think people are missing is we're talking about a group of people who are, I'm trying to figure out how to sort this out. The LGBT movement has had some very fortunate things in this century. One of them being that on this particular issue, most American Catholics are what the theologians call indissent, which is to say, and I'm one of them. I think that my church's teachings on gay marriage are wrong. I think I'm perfectly fine with gay marriage. My church is not. Most American Catholics think that way. So
I agree. Yeah. I'm a Catholic.
So the things that, you know, the things that would get, this is just not something that gets our attention. However, if you're talking about something like the abortifacient mandate or the contraception mandate, as it's better known, which was so draconian that the Little Sisters of the Poor have had to sue the federal government, that is something that is a lot more controversial because Catholics, even Catholics who don't necessarily agree with the pro-life position, know people who have been harmed by that order and who have been essentially forced to sin. Not a lot of us know evangelicals. They tend to set themselves apart by definition. They prefer it that way. So those of us who are not part of that group aren't really noticing what they are going through. We're not recognizing, perhaps, the fact that they are basically being told, you can't be bakers, you can't be florists, you can't be in the wedding business at all, period. You can't. Because we don't share their opinions, we don't necessarily have that issue. But they're basically being asked to choose between economic advancement and their faith. That is a choice that this country's foundation was based on the notion that that is a false choice. For many evangelicals in 21st century America, that isn't a false choice anymore. Now, I'm not going to say I know exactly how to resolve that. We've needed public accommodation laws to weed out racism in this country for the last 40 to 50 years. So the question of whether we can pull back on those is not something I'm willing to answer tonight. I don't have an answer. All I am saying is that the things we're seeing in Mississippi and the things we're seeing in North Carolina and the things we saw in Indiana last year and some other places, yes, there's some people who are exploiting it for their own political gain. Yes, there are people who want to be divisive and enjoy being divisive. But you're also dealing with real people who are being essentially told, you either give up your faith or you give up your livelihood. And America was founded on the notion that we shouldn't have to do that. And we shouldn't just dismiss these people's concerns just because we disagree with them or just because we are not part of their faith, or because, frankly, some of us look down on their faith. I'm not saying that the way they're trying to answer it is right. What I am saying is they should not simply be ignored or scorned upon or looked down upon. That's not entirely fair to them either. They have a voice, and it should
right.
be heard.
I agree. Let me ask you something. You know, everybody talks about the bakery example and the wedding photographer example. Are there any other examples? Because, you know, I agree with what you just said, DJ. And my feeling is that there should not be a law, you know, saying that people do not have to do a job because they don't like somebody's sexuality or they don't believe in same-sex marriage. But I also believe that if the photographer doesn't want to come to your wedding, find another photographer. Now, if you go into a bakery and you say, we'd like this beautiful birthday, this beautiful wedding cake that we saw at so-and-so's wedding, can you duplicate it for us? Bake it for them. But if they ask you to put on, you know, two, you know, phallic symbols on the top, then no, you shouldn't have to do it. That's my morality. I'm not saying it should be everybody's morality. But what I'm trying to understand is...
This is common sense.
Okay, but what are the... I mean, those are two specific instances. Beyond that, beyond the wedding photographer, the wedding florist, and the wedding cake baker, who else is affected by this?
Nobody. Well, this is this. Greg, if I can answer Kevin's question, the honest answer is at this point, if in this particular issue, it's really nobody. It's all about the wedding issue right now, and that will probably be the only part where you're going to see this sort of dramatic clash, because this is the one. Right. This is the one that is. This is really the only point of contention. From what I can see, there's really no point of contention on the rest, and that's why these things. That's why these things keep flopping in terms of the court of public opinion, because they keep going beyond that. Indiana's law went beyond that. Kansas's law went beyond that. Arizona's law tended to go beyond that. Mississippi's law went beyond that. North Carolina's law. They all take an issue where even you, Kevin, might see where they're coming from, and then they expand it to go to – they take it too far, and they expand it to include a whole bunch of things that you don't understand and that I don't understand, that nobody here understands, and that's why they lose the fight. They get politically greedy, and they reach for too much.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The Mississippi law, for example, it starts with, look, I don't have to bake a cake for you because this is my private business, and I don't recognize, you know, this offends me as a Christian. I'm going to use air quotes or whatever. This offends my religion. But then it goes and says, you know what, I don't have to rent a room to you. Right. Because, or I can evict you because you're gay and this affects me, or I can fire you.
There's housing discrimination laws for that, though.
No, actually, because they're not a protected group now, or because
I don't know if they are, whether or not they are protected.
Not in Mississippi.
Yeah,
anymore.
I don't know whether I think Emily's point was that they may be protected federally. I'm not sure that they are, but to get to Greg's point. When most Americans see that, they go, no, that's not what we're talking about. If you are upset about a wedding that you do not consider a wedding, that's one thing. If you're talking about throwing people on the street because you don't like their private lives, no, we're not going to go along with you on that. And that's what. And again, that's why they keep flopping. They keep taking this too far.
But they do keep taking these things, and they keep bringing this up, and these laws keep coming up. And, you know, like you say... You know, is this a divide within the party? Like, once again, the Catholic thing. You know, it just keeps coming up year after year. And as far as the religious freedom, this is the same. This, you know, the fact that I hear again and again, oh my goodness, Sharia law might pop up at any point. And Lord forbid Sharia law, oh my goodness. And yet we have these religious freedom laws. But not, of course, Sharia law, because that would be, well, that's crazy.
Well,
talk.
I think, yeah. So getting to the split within the party. I think what we are seeing here, and part of the reason why, for example, you're not seeing any split on the Mississippi side, but it's a big deal in North Carolina, is because Governor McCrory ran his 2012 campaign as an economic conservative. He basically said he would avoid any social issue that came around him. He basically, I mean, treated social issues like the droppings in Missile Command. I'm blowing them up as soon as I can see them. I just dated myself.
Good
Thank
reference.
You, I just dated myself. Anybody under 30 has no idea what the hell That's I'm talking okay. about. But
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly. But he...
The rollerball.
I think dating yourself is a form of homosexuality, by the way.
That very well be. The fact of the matter is... He is now essentially, as governor, doing the exact opposite of what he said he would do when he ran 4 years ago. And I do think that's going to hurt him, because a lot of folks who backed him thought that he would be focusing on economic issues. And I think he's actually done quite a decent job on economic issues. Others would disagree. That's fine. But we're basically looking at this like, and somebody's calling me for some reason, We're basically that's what that is, by the
way. It's the governor of North Carolina.
Yeah, right, he's saying,
hey, leave me alone.
But
he goes, I've done better than okay.
But, you know, there are things that we expected him to do. This isn't one of them. So I think a lot of his backers, particularly those who backed him on economic issues, are looking at this like, Roy, when the hell did you say you were going to do this in 2012? And why didn't you tell me so that I could back somebody against you in the primary? Because it sure as hell wasn't what you were talking about you were going to do. And so that's why I think you're seeing a lot of this, is because a lot of people, you know, a lot of moderates didn't see this as something the party should deal with, but a lot of economic conservatives didn't either. So people who ran and won as economic conservatives and were suddenly picking up this banner, the rest of us are looking at it like, what are you doing? You never mentioned that before. Whereas in Mississippi, where even the Democratic Attorney General doesn't want to acknowledge same-sex marriage in his state, it's an entirely different situation, and they'll probably ride out whatever political storm they have.
Sure. I've been listening to a lot of articles lately about Wallace and Goldwater, and I think those guys keep coming up, and people are there's a renewed interest in them because of Trump. But I heard I made some connections. I don't think I originated these between some of their Wallace and Goldwater's sort of regressive, let's go back to the old ways attitudes, and the transgender bathroom laws. And I think the idea, the point that sort of came up to me that I think works here is that if you're not actively in the gay community, if you don't actively have friends and you're not involved in this culture, then you don't think about it a whole lot. And it's not necessarily, even though your friends might be gay, it's not a part of your life. It's not where your brain is. And you look at the large chunks of the country that are not there. And there's there are even fewer people that are thinking about the issues of transgendered people. And it's such, I think that it's, for as great the strides are for the gay community, we haven't really even begun, is the transgender community isn't the same, you know? It's a separate set of issues, but I think that if you're not even paying attention to gay rights, you're certainly not paying attention to transgender stuff. And I think it's just a lot of time and a lot of just like these. I think this law in particular was passed thinking that you would be able to tell who was a man and who was a woman and how do you protect the little girls in the bathroom.
Yeah.
When, you know, the point that's been made here, and Emily, you articulated it, is just like at that point, you don't know. Like, you can't tell.
I will say this is, you know, I've only known two transgender people in my life, which is probably two more than most people, but...
That you know of.
Well, you're right, that I know of. But the point is that those people go through so much when they're going through transition that I don't think that they intentionally want to put themselves in bad situations anyway. So like I said, by the time that someone is going to use the bathroom, you're probably not going to know anyway. Now, will people take exception to the rule? Probably so, but let me tell you what, those people were going to do it anyway. You know, this law is absolutely ridiculous because it's not going to stop people that some folks in Carolina and Mississippi think are going to perpetrate a crime. You think a law is going to stop them? Ooh, I'm not going to go in this bathroom now because of this law. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think the assumption that somehow being more open to what trans women and trans men are experiencing and giving them more leeway of choice, for lack of a better term, as to which bathroom to use, that would somehow provide cover for child predators. You know, these are people who don't, you know, these are, you know, it's kind of like, it's frankly, this, and I'm going to now upset Kevin and Greg to no end.
I'm ready.
The flip side of what we hear from you guys about gun control all the time. And the simple fact of the matter is...
Oh, wait! Now I'm upset,
because
the simple fact
of the matter is, criminals aren't going to be stopped by gun laws, and child predators are not going to be stopped by bathroom bills. as Emily just stated. You know, these are people who do not
Was this bill ever really targeted towards child predators? Honestly,
no.
To compare these two laws, it was one of the assumptions
that was used to get it passed. The idea,
right? But in honesty, to make that comparison, frankly, in my opinion,
gun control laws aren't really aimed at criminals anyway. They're aimed at the law abiding. So to me, the metaphor still holds.
You know, I'm going to surprise you guys by saying I think there's something in what DJ is saying, because just like gun-free zones, we're talking about penis-free zones. And can you ever really have a penis-free zone? Because if
you do, the only people
that will have penises are bad people.
Oh, my God.
I love bringing this conversation to a screeching halt. That's what I live for.
So let's talk about the Republican National Committee, because that's a good
transition. Yeah, speaking of penises,
I'm sure there's not going to be any penises there.
I just got to say the Republican Party, total side note, is an absolute circus right now, or a food fight, whatever you want to call it, but it's pretty messed up. I mean, we got a lot going on.
Well, the Democrats can't really have bragging rights either. But go ahead, let's talk about the Republicans.
Yeah, well, this is what we found out this weekend was that there was at least one, and this is missing the wood for the trees, but that's okay. One Republican committee member recognized that under the current rules for the committee, for the convention, which are run much like the rules for the House, the convention chair, like the speaker, has quite a bit of power. And the concern that this committee member had was that the chairman, House Speaker Paul Ryan, who chairs the convention, would thus have the power to reopen the floor for nominations whenever he wanted to. So if, for example, under Rule 40B, which now really is going to take place for this convention, under Rule 40B, only Trump and Cruz would go into nomination on the first ballot. Maybe that holds in the second ballot, but by the third or fourth ballot, if nobody's getting the nomination, the House Speaker apparently has the power to say, you know, we're going to reopen the floor to nominations, and we'll take any nomination on the floor, whatever, and that's where you get Governor Kasich or General Mattis, if my social media is any indication, or various other kinds of strange ideas. So what happens is, this guy says, well, if we set it by Robert's Rules of Order instead, then the convention chair doesn't have the authority to open the floor to nominations. It becomes an issue of the convention delegates have to do that.
Yeah, but all you need is one person out of 4,700 to say, I have a motion, right?
Well, no, you would need 1,237 votes in favor of that motion.
Right, but I mean to open up the discussion
of whether or not we're going to do away with
40B.
That's open up the discussion.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So one person makes the motion, another person seconds it, all in favor say aye, so now we're having a discussion about it.
Right, we're having a discussion, but that's not the same thing as reopening it by fiat.
Right,
which
I
is
agree.
Apparently what I the agree. Convention chair has the power to do. So apparently this committee member is upset because Rince Priebus, the RNC chair, has apparently done everything he could to delay this and basically create a situation where the Rules Committee doesn't see it until like 48 hours before they were voting, which would apparently make it harder for them to vote in favor of it. Basically what we're seeing here is that the distrust within the party is so great that we are now seeing Trump supporters and Cruz supporters convinced, even as they're battling each other and as they're yelling at each other, that they are convinced that the establishment, whatever you want to call it, or the folks who are backing neither Trump nor Cruz or the Kasich backers, will all somehow conspire to spring a new nominee on them without any of their okay. And this is just an idea of how deep the fissures are within the Republican Party. And it's not just Trump versus Cruz it's not Trump versus Cruz or even Trump, Cruz, and Kasich. Is that this is basically the party is essentially a group of cats that are held in a bag, and the bag is called the ballot access laws. If it weren't for the ballot access laws, this party would have atomized over this entire process. And it's just for me, it is an example of the fact that this party, what is still my party, doesn't really know where it wants to go, doesn't really know how to get there, does not even sure where to begin, and has fallen to arguing amongst themselves about procedure because they don't know how to do anything else anymore.
Let me ask this of the Republicans on the podcast. What I don't understand is, I understand the antipathy towards Donald Trump. I understand that party leaders and a lot of delegates don't want him to be their standard bearer. But what's the alternative? What's the worst that could happen? I guess what I'm asking is, isn't it better, considering everything that DJ just laid out, which is leading to pure anarchy, isn't it better just to give the man the nomination, hope for the best, expect for the worst, and then when he loses, you just say, you know what, it was a lost year, but he does not represent the Republican Party, his views do not represent the Republican Party, and we're going back to what worked for us in the past. Why is that not a better approach than dealing with all of this stuff, which could lead to someone else getting the nomination, and then Trump runs third party, and then the whole thing falls apart anyways? I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, how can Donald Trump destroy the GOP? I keep hearing people say, if he gets the nomination, it will destroy the GOP, it will be the end of the party. And I just don't see that. I just see it as a bad election cycle.
So let me try to break this down a little bit from a Republican perspective, and I don't think I speak for DJ, but he can agree or disagree. So on the inside of the Republican Party, obviously we have a more establishment feel, more Tea Party type situation, and a couple of people in between. I think the biggest problem that we have, there are people from both sides that are very anti-Donald Trump, but it's for several reasons. Is at least for me, I don't want a presidential nominee that has not participated in the party before, that hasn't put his blood, sweat, and tears into electing other people, no matter what side of the aisle he sits on the Republican side of the bench. I want to know, this guy has probably never even been to a state convention. He's probably never participated in a district convention. I mean, who is this guy? Who does he think he is? You know, he just flies in on a broom and ruins the day? I mean, what is this?
I would say, and I actually do have a different perspective from Emily, my concern is not with Trump per se, but it's with what Trump represents. Basically, we are dealing with, I consider, a very serious problem. I mean, a split within the party is inevitable, whether Trump gets the nomination or not. The question is this a party that is still focused on limiting government size, scope, and cost, and trying to figure out how to do that in 21st century America? Or is the party going to transition into what is essentially, under Trump, a big government for white people party? Because that has really been the one unifying, that's been the glue that has held his entire ramshackle campaign together, is that he's all for big government, but he's for big government for white people, not big government for people of color. That's all Donald Trump's campaign is, and if he is the nominee, that's what the Republican Party will be. And it's not just a situation in my case for, well, hang on, Kevin.
Well,
it's not just a situation in my case where I think that would put the party in a bad direction in a bad election cycle. That would make it a party of which I could no longer be a member. That'll put a stain on the party from which it can never recover, and it'll put a stain on the party from which I don't think it should ever recover. Because I'll never want to be a part of that kind of that party ever again if that's the direction in which it goes.
But again, I have to ask, but it's the last part where you say that becomes the Republican Party. I can never be a part of that party. Why can't it just be, you know what? That was a bad choice for a standard bearer for one cycle. He did not represent the Republican Party. We're going back to basics. Why do we have to explode the Republican Party just because of one bad candidate? I mean, on the Democratic side, we probably had bad candidates who should not have been our nominee.
Did Michael Dukakis or John Kerry or even Al Gore, for that matter, did they fundamentally reorient the Democratic Party in a direction that was hostile to either of you? No, they did not, or you still wouldn't be...
Well, I would say that I would say that Walter Mondale did. He wanted to raise taxes. He was definitely the most liberal. I think probably more liberal than Michael Dukakis. Person to run since maybe LBJ, and might have even been more liberal than LBJ.
But you're talking about a matter of more liberal versus less liberal. I'm talking about a complete change in direction of the party. I'm talking about a party that becomes a nationalist party, a party that is more like UKIP in Great Britain, more like Marine, more like the Le Pen family in France.
But
No. This is, and Kevin,
this is the problem
that you don't see, Kevin, because you are outside the party. Is that this is something that has been built? Right. This big government wave within the party has been building up for years. It's been building up. I mean, you had
two questions.
You had the only Republican president that we have had over the last 20 to 24 years. Expanded Medicare, bailed out the banks for over $400 billion, and laid the groundwork for the federal government owning and operating two of the three largest automobile companies in the United States. That was the Republican Party, the party that's supposed to be about smaller government, the party that's supposed to be about limited government and lower spending and lower taxes. This is a party that in my state, in our state, Emily in our state, raised taxes three times in 10 years. This is a party that is on the cusp of rejecting the things that I entered it for. I'm not going to stay if it's rejecting the reasons I entered it in the first place. That's what.
Well, okay. I mean, it's believe me, it's not my intention to argue with you, DJ, because I really just want to understand.
I get it.
But I would say, look, George W. Bush. You mentioned George W. Bush. He was for amnesty for illegal aliens. John McCain wrote McCain-Feingold. Those are things that are not planks of the Republican Party, and yet they ran. They one won twice, one lost once, and then you move on. I just don't think that Donald Trump, being a fiscal, whatever you want to call him, because I agree with you, he's not conservative in the way that you are a fiscal conservative or in the way that Ted Cruz is a fiscal conservative or John Kasich, for sure, is a fiscal conservative. But so he's a little or a lot outside those bounds, which is bad for your party. I agree. It's going to send a bifurcated message to the electorate, but he's going to lose. And then, like I said, you rebuild. You start again, and you go, let's not make that same mistake again.
I think it goes beyond that. Let me help you here a little bit. I think it's more than just actions. Like TJ said, one, it's not just Donald Trump. Okay, he can't be the only one to blame. This has been building for a little while with Teapot. Sure, but he's been rebranding. And this is going to be a stain on the party. It's like this is when people think of the party for years to come. Young people, old people, kids who like hot dog people, they're going to be thinking of Donald Trump instead of
you have establishment icons, if you will, to use the term, like Karl Rove, like Peter King out of New York, who are all suddenly warming to Donald Trump because they really don't like Ted Cruz. And
but hold on. Peter King is kind of a scumbag.
Peter King has his own issues. but the simple fact of the matter is, what is going to happen is if Donald Trump gets the nomination, then the people who run the Republican Party are all going to come around. They're all going to cave, and they're all going to show that the notion of this being a principled party was bunk. In which case, at least in my opinion, it's not just that the Republican Party has gone off the reservation. It's not going to be about the Republican Party rebuilding after Trump, if Trump is the nominee. It's going to be about the conservative movement rebuilding outside the Republican Party and setting themselves up to replace it in the 21st century, because that is what we will have to do.
Go ahead. Well, have you noticed how many Republican officials are not going to the convention this year?
Yeah.
tons of them. Yeah. You know, and they all seem to be busy. Somehow, they all, you know, their timeshares have all come up that week.
Yeah, for the first time, running for Congress somehow doesn't coincide with going to the RNC convention.
Exactly. They're all going to Boca that week.
I've got a question to actually ask you, Kevin, in your opinion. So just tell me what you think, because I have a different perception maybe than what you would put out, but if Bernie somehow becomes a nominee, do you feel like you're going to have the same type of split or splinter in the Democratic Party that the Republicans may have with Trump?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was going to pose that exact scenario to DJ as the flip side of his argument. And my answer would be, no, I don't think it would be a problem. We would run this extremely radical liberal/socialist candidate. If he won, then yes, I see the Democratic Party really shifting further left than it might be comfortable with. But if he lost, it would be just like George McGovern was, or like Walter Mondale was, only a little bit more so. And then we would go back to, you know, looking for the next Bill Clinton. Yeah. Frankly, so that's why I think that's a very good analogy. And
so basically, elect him and hang him out to dry.
No.
There would be support.
Not nominate him and hang him out to dry. I'm saying that he would get the support of the predominance of Democrats.
No. I mean a post election. If he wins.
The Democratic Party would move far to the left from where it has been over
here's the problem, though. Here's the thing, and again, this is from my perspective outside the Democratic Party.
Let me just say, it would still be the Democratic Party. Okay,
from my perspective outside of the party, the main arguments that I tend to see between Clinton and Sanders is about what speed is acceptable, how quickly can government grow, how do you pay for it, how much higher taxes can go, how much greater can government actually be. We're not talking about the kind of change in direction that would occur on the Republican side if Trump is nominated. We're talking about, in the case of a Trump nomination, the party changing 180 degrees. When you mentioned Goldwater, actually the Goldwater example is fairly close, because the Republican Party was largely a big government party for much of its history, certainly before 1932. It became the accidental home of limited government supporters when FDR introduced the New Deal and pulled a lot of the left wing of the Republican Party out of the party and over to the Democrats. But the Republican Party was still a largely corporatist, not so friendly to the free market party until Barry Goldwater was nominated, and it suddenly changed direction and became a more limited government party in many ways. And that's why a lot of people left the party in 1964 and did not come back. I mean, the Northeast went from a swing region to a largely Democratic region in the 1960s, in large part because they did not like where Barry Goldwater was taking the party. I do not like where Donald Trump will take the party.
I don't understand that argument. You guys won. After Goldwater lost in 64, you guys won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of the next 6 elections. And Ronald and the Reagan resolution was a direct descendant of Goldwater. So I can't understand your
point. It was not the same people. The New Yorkers who voted Republican in 1960 didn't vote Republican in 1964 and didn't vote Republican in 1968 either. Okay, the Republicans in Pennsylvania and New England and Maryland who voted the gender gap that we talk about now was reversed in the 1960s. Before 1964, women voted more Republican than men did. That changed with the Goldwater nomination. Yes, the party did very well after Goldwater's 1964 defeat because it mainly had folks like me who otherwise had no party or might have considered the Democrats. So it was a different Republican Party after 1964 than before 1964. That's all I'm trying to say. A Donald Trump, a post-Trump big government Republican Party, a nationalist protectionist Republican Party, might do very well in 2020 and 2024, but it won't have me. That's all that I can say. I can't speak for anybody else. I can just say for what for me, it won't have me. That's all.
Okay, well,
DJ,
well,
you are welcome to come to the Democrat side. We would love to have you. We have breakfasts every Wednesday. It's no GMOs.
And we have the best comedy shows, really.
Ah, we do. You know. We do.
So, well, we've spent a lot of time talking about the dysfunction in the GOP. Should we talk about the dysfunction on the other side of the aisle?
There something on TV the other night? I forget what was it.
I hate it when grandma and grandpa fight.
It could not have been a debate because there weren't enough debates this year. There were only six debates. So I don't know what you were watching, but it couldn't have been a Democratic debate because the six debates ended back in February.
Oh. I heard something about low ratings, or I can't recall.
Yes, there was a Democratic debate. It did do pretty poorly in the national ratings, even though it was on a Thursday night on CNN, which, of course, everybody said was at the magic time slot until the Democrats got into it. And Hillary and Bernie went at it pretty rigorously. What did you guys think? Who saw it? Who didn't? Who doesn't care?
I watched the whole thing. I promised I was only going to watch the first 5 minutes because I was like, yeah, another love fest. And, you know, and it was in Brooklyn, so I figured it was going to be sponsored by Pabst Blue Ribbon or something. And it was nasty. They both came out swinging. Bernie was sarcastic and Hillary was just yelling a lot. It was not pretty. It was a lot like the Republican debates, except when they yelled about issues.
Well,
no one talked about their hands.
You know, what I find fascinating is I've watched apparently there have been nine of them, because Hillary kept saying we've done this 8 times already, so I assume that means there have been 9 debates. And I've watched every minute of every one of them. And this has to be a genetic thing, because I watch those things, and time after time after time, to me, she wipes the floor with them. And I know that the Bernie Sanders people are watching a different debate. They're seeing a debate where he is making a fool out of her. And we're arguing politics and who's the better person. And, you know, in 75 years, they're going to figure out that this all had to do with some little, you know, pea-sized thing in the back of our medulla oblongata, and it had nothing to do with politics. It was just a perception thing.
He got a couple really good shots in, but he had this plan going in where everything she answered, he would stop and he'd say, "You need to answer the question. You never answered it." And it really made her seem dishonest. It made her seem, and even the moderator kept looking at him saying, "She did answer the question." And she would say, "I just answered that." And he goes, no, what you need to say is," and then he would give his own answer. He goes, "So you're agreeing with me then?"
Well, he also twisted her words in ways that, frankly, were pretty obvious and pretty unscrupulous. For instance, the minimum wage issue. Anyone that has done any basic reading on this, Hillary Clinton believes that the national minimum wage that we should try to set should be $12 an hour, phased in over a number of years. She believes that because Patty Murray and Debbie Stabenow and Kristen Gillibrand and a couple of other people have put this package together, this bill together, and they believe that even though the Democrats are in the minority in the Senate and the minority in the Congress, they believe that this has a chance of passing, you know, in some reasonable future time within the next session or the next two sessions. It's not that Hillary Clinton doesn't want a $15 an hour minimum wage. She's made it abundantly clear by advocating for the New York $15 bill, by advocating for the California $15 bill that Jerry Brown just signed. She's made it abundantly clear that she feels that in certain municipalities, in certain states, $15 makes sense. So when Wolf Blitzer asked her a very simple question. If you were elected president and the Congress put in front of you a passed piece of legislation that had a $15 minimum wage, would you sign it? She said, yes, of course I would. And Sanders took that to mean, oh, now you want a $15 minimum wage, not a $12 minimum wage. That's not what the question was. The question was, would you sign it if the Congress passed it? And she said, yes. It doesn't mean that she's changed her position. It means that she would sign that piece of legislation. And yet, you know, the Bernie people are making this into the biggest flip-flop since, you know, John Kerry, and it's not.
The biggest one, and this goes back to something Emily said about Trump, was when they asked Bernie, are you a Democrat? Do you remember that one?
And yep.
Bernie just, you know, he pulled out his cane, he pulled out his hat, and he did a dance number. And he said, so are you a Democrat? He goes, well, you know, I think I could do this, and watch me soft shoe here, and he never answered the question.
No, he said, well, I'm running as a Democrat, so I guess that makes me a Democrat. That's what he said.
Right, but that's not really, well, yes, I'm a Democrat. And it really comes down to, hey, are you raising money for down ticket? And his response was, well, they put my name on letters, and that raised a lot of money because, you know.
Right.
But no, you know, it's important. The down ticket races are important. This is how you get things done. And, you know, being a Democrat's important.
The thing that I found to be the biggest flip-flop actually happened today when, after weeks and weeks and weeks of him saying that he does not believe that gun manufacturers should be allowed to be sued by the victims of, you know, gun crimes, today on, I think it was on ABC's George Stephanopoulos This Week or whatever they call it, he said, yeah, of course they should be able to sue. That's after a federal judge actually ruled in favor of the Sandy Hook parents. All of a sudden today, Bernie did, to me, a ballerina-esque flip-flop on the issue. And I'm curious what again, Jonah and the
well,
Republicans
that was obvious.
In our little group
he
here
said he was against suing the gun companies before the Wisconsin primary, and he was for suing them after the Wisconsin primary. I don't think we need to say anything else here.
I think that's pretty cut and dry. Pretty cut and dry. To the point. You know, I don't even want to get into the gun debate because you guys know where I sit, so it is what it is. But, you know, I think when I look at Bernie and I look at Hillary and I watch the debate, the one thing that I just noticed was obviously she's very well polished, well put together. That's the kind of look I like in a candidate. But reading some of the comments online, you know, the Bernie folks are very much like the Trump folks in the sense that they're like, she's the establishment, man. You know, she's this, she's that. And Bernie's putting it to her. He's got fight in him. And I see a lot of parallels between Bernie and Trump as far as, you know, how they just are kind of not, you know, totally PC. They just say what comes to mind. And I think that's what a lot of people like. But so what are my Dems thinking? What do you guys think about the claim that, you know, Hillary is a total establishment and she doesn't understand my problems?
Well, it's nonsense. It's nonsense. But, you know, that's what the Bernie people, that's how they've postured their entire campaign. And by the way, it's a campaign that is failing, regardless of their talk about momentum and winning 8 out of 9 and how much money he raises in $27 increments. It is a failing campaign. Now, on Tuesday night, I may have to eat my words. I may be proven wrong. But if not, if he loses New York and then he goes on to lose Pennsylvania and lose Maryland, and you know maybe he'll win in Connecticut because it's close to Vermont. Maybe he'll do okay in Rhode Island, which has what about 16 voters altogether.
but he'll lose Maryland.
So if he loses those three states, this is a done deal. And I don't care how
New
far
York,
he
it's a
came
done deal.
From April. I don't care whether he was at, you know, 0.3% in the national polls, and she was at 99.7%, and he's brought it down to being close. Close in the end means nothing. You either win the nomination or you lose it. Ted Kennedy came very close. He was never president. Bill Bradley made a spirited fight. He was never president. Al Gore made a spirited fight in 88. He was never president. And Ronald Reagan is one of the very few who actually did come back and win a nomination 4 years after losing one. That's not going to happen with this man. He's done marvelous things in the Democratic Party. Frankly, I like a lot of what Bernie has done. I'm glad he ran. I wasn't an advocate of him running back in August and September. Now I see that it was actually good for the Democratic Party and good for the Hillary Clinton candidacy. But that said, this is...
So are you reading that off the talking points they just sent, or what? Because that sounded so scripted.
No, I actually make...
I love it.
We get the same newsletter every week.
No, I actually, this is how I think. Believe it or not, the talking points are there because people think them.
we get them telepathically now. It's our new thing for the Democratic. Look, the Sanders campaign's been good for us because otherwise, if it would have been a coronation like everyone said it was going to be, it would have been an ugly, ugly, terrible thing. In addition, Hillary needed to move to the left.
She needed to move to the left,
of our people.
She needed to be sharpened up because, frankly, she was not that hot a candidate back in October and November. And he's got ground organizations in all of these states that they would not have otherwise had for the Democratic Party.
His organization's a little sloppy, his ground troops, especially like in Ohio, they were really sloppy, and in Kentucky right now they never have literature, and it's not because they're out of stock, they're not as seasoned.
Don't say literature to college students. That is not going to get you any place.
I know, but they're like for going doors and stuff like that, and even envelopes and some of their phone banking, it's not as well written or sharp or to the point. It's not a really good ground organization. And nationally, I think it's well done, but a lot of times, as we all know, these campaigns are won in the small, especially in busy communities. But moving on, we are running out of time, and I see on our notes probably the most important aspect of the day is Jonah. Who is Jonah going to vote for?
Yeah.
I see this is an highlighted.
He's really been sitting back tonight. He's been absorbing it all. Not saying a lot.
I assume he wrote that for me because he's got a surprise for me.
So I've not talked about a lot of these last couple of minutes here because it really on both the left and the right. For me, for someone who goes back and forth between the parties, I don't love any of these candidates, and they're all driving me crazy to one extent or another. And some it's very passive, and some of it's more of a disappointment, and some of it's just completely infuriating. But so I'm currently registered Republican. I switch my registration from time to time, and Maryland is coming up pretty soon. So I've thought about it, and I've listened to the voices in my head, and I now have a plan. And I'm just going to, I'll tell you, and then maybe it'll be a cliffhanger and we'll talk about it next week.
But
I've decided to vote for Trump. And,
as soon as you said you hear voices in your head, I knew you were going to vote for Trump.
Yeah.
Are you serious? Are you serious?
I am serious.
Okay. We're going to go long because we want to hear more about him.
You guys, we've got to be very supportive. He's coming out of the closet to us. This is the time where we nurture him.
I'm not attacking.
I assume he's eating. It's not the GMOs. We know that.
Yeah, you're coming out of the closet. I like it. I'm so happy for you.
So, DJ, you sent me this article that sort of highlighted why it really tied up for me what the hell is wrong with Kasich, right? Because he was really the guy I was hoping would come from behind and do it, but he's got no organization. He doesn't know what he's doing. And maybe he's got some like verbal tics and faux pas and whatever. But the fact that even if he wins Maryland, and he's not doing bad here, but even if he wins, he wouldn't be able to get the delegates because of a lack of organization. Just kind of makes me say, well, that's That's the end of that, I guess.
I think DJ fainted.
Yeah, I think
DJ, your mic might have gone out. We're not hearing you. But, well, you know, first of all, there's so many things that come to mind by hearing that, Jonah, and I'd love to hear more. But the first thing that occurs to me is now, you know, we can rightfully say we've had a Trump supporter on the show all along. So no one can knock us for never having had a Trump supporter.
No,
that's not true.
by definition, if you vote for him, you're a Trump voter. So.
Well, but you said all along, and I've not been all along. And I will just say that the reason... So I can either say I have three candidates that are still in the race, and I choose between them, or Lindsey Graham's not on the ballot in Maryland anymore, but I guess I could vote for Rand Paul or somebody. And I've decided not to vote for someone who's already withdrawn as a protest vote. I don't know what that...
Jonah.
I don't know what that would get me.
Jonah,
yeah.
remember who Lindsey is supporting.
Yeah, you've said this too, but here's the thing. Every time Lindsey Graham says you should vote for Cruz, he then turns away and vomits and then comes back on camera. I've seen it like seven times now.
That is so true too.
But your man is so worried about the fate of the country that he's willing to risk his own digestive system. If he's willing to sacrifice his digestive system for the country,
his teeth enamel.
You can give Ted Cruz your vote.
I think, well, see, here's the thing. I think that Donald Trump is a, I think there's zero chance that even if Trump gets the nomination that he would win the election. Even if Hillary Clinton is officially, you know, the FBI's after her and she's on the lam, she's still going to beat Donald Trump. I don't see any possibility of him winning. I see a possibility of Ted Cruz, whereas Donald Trump operates out of ignorance and self-interest, I think that Ted Cruz is a serious threat to the world. And so I can't go there. So that means that I have to strike my match and watch it burn. I have to help bring down the Republican Party by voting for Donald Trump in Maryland.
You are my own personal Susan Sarandon. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
You are the wind beneath my wings.
Before we head out for the evening, guys, do you guys want to predict New York?
Hillary by 12. Trump by 18.
Does he reach 50?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to predict.
I also fear that Trump will cross 50. I think he'll be at 52. I think Cruz will finish ahead of Kasich, which I did not think would happen last week, but I think it'll happen this week, which will make a Kasich Pennsylvania moment impossible. I think Hillary wins by at least 10 points over Bernie in New York.
And I'm going to be the contrarian. I'm going to say Hillary by 8 points, maybe even 6. And I think Trump, actually, I'm feeling Kasich is going to come back strong. And Trump wins by one vote, and it's Jonah's vote.
Oh. If only.
Wait. How is Jonah voting?
I'm trading.
I don't know where you're voting.
This is why we have voter fraud.
It's gonna be 70 degrees and sunny on Tuesday in New York. So I think that Trump is 2 points short of hitting 50. I think he'll win. I think Kasich will come in third, which breaks my heart. And I think Hillary only by 6.
Yeah, I think that Trump is going to do better than most people are giving him credit for. I mean, well, it looks like it's trending that way anyway. And I think that Bernie's going to do better. I don't know,
Jonah.
I don't know 6, but I think it's going to be pretty close.
Well, on that note, thank you to everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week.